Good afternoon. It's always nice to see a packed house for housing. I invite folks to find a seat. And I'll call this meeting to order. First up of business, we have approval of the minutes. Lee Johnson, have you had a chance to review the minutes for April 3rd?
Chair Howard, I've reviewed the minutes and make a motion to accept them.
Thank you. Lee Johnson moves approval of the minutes of April 3rd. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The minutes are approved. We have several bills up today, members, and so we'll first have House Bill 2271. Just a note for our testifiers, we are going to have stick to a pretty strict 2 minutes per testifier to make sure we have time to get through all of our bills. And so if you hear a little ding, ding, ding from Mr. Dockendorf here, that'll mean kind of finish your thoughts, but just grateful to see a big turnout. And first, we have House Bill 2271, Representative Censor Mira. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
I will move that House File 2271 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And Representative, I understand you have an A1 amendment. Could you briefly describe the amendment?
Yes, so the A1 amendment helps get the bill in the shape that I would like, mainly changing the dollar amounts for the program to reflect 1 year instead of two, and to be more in line with the supplemental budget targets that we have for this year.
Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A1 is adopted. To your bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Howard and committee members. Really happy for my first time here in housing to talk about a really important bill to meet the housing needs across our state. I know that housing is one of the things that I get the most constituent outreach about, and I'm often having constituents who are really talking to me about the variety of needs that people have relating to housing and the housing continuum, from how do we help someone who doesn't have a safe place to sleep tonight get into a shelter or temporary housing, to how do we keep people who are renting in their homes, in their apartments, and then how do we help people own their first home when we know that that's a way in our country to build generational wealth. So House File 2271 appropriates funding to the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program, which provides supportive services and financial assistance to both families and individuals across Minnesota. This program allows a lot of flexibility, so it's one of the best programs the state has to assist families and individuals with their immediate needs, such as rent deposits, rent payments, or even utility payments. Eligible households that are experiencing unsheltered homelessness or at imminent risk of homelessness can access the program, and it's the one program we have at the state that can address needs across the housing continuum, from people experiencing unsheltered homelessness to avoiding foreclosures for low-income homeowners. The initial dollar amounts in this bill introduced in 2023 are reflective of the need we have across the state. And so while we know we can't fund that to the full amount today, I do think it's important that we look at those numbers. To illustrate the need, FHPAP providers, a majority of whom are community action agencies across the state, they typically release FHPAP resources quarterly, and they run out on average within 2 weeks. So that larger number was really illustrating what would it take to really fully fund those programs. But we know that with today's amendment of $10 million, we may not be able to solve the housing instability and housing access challenges. But it is a great investment for this committee, flexible funding across our state, and will help hundreds of families and individuals. So when we look at the resources available in our 2024 supplemental budget, I'm proud that we have this program that we can fund that can benefit Minnesotans immediately. And with that, I would love to turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Censor Mira. I can't believe this is your first time in front of housing. Not a prerequisite here. Not a prerequisite here.
Strongly recommended.
Thank you. Our first testifier is Patty Paulson. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm Patty Paulson. I'm the Director of Housing Stability at Neighborhood House, and I am testifying in support of HF 2271. I want to thank you for all the additional resources appropriated in 2023 for FHPAP, including entrusting Neighborhood House with a $2.4 million direct appropriations to provide FHPAP funding. Now, I'm here today not to just represent Neighborhood House, but to represent the perspectives of FHPAP providers in Minnesota. FHPAP providers are very similar to the households that come to us needing assistance. Each month, we have very limited funds to meet all the requests of the assistance of the request of for assistance that we receive. Just like households with limited funds, providers have to make choices, and none of those choices are easy. During the last 6 months, Neighborhood House had approximately $800,000 in funds to assist households in need. We were able to help 443 households. These numbers are great, right? Well, no. Because during that same period, we received requests of 1,892 households asking for an amount of $4.3 million. And we're only one agency in one county. Can you imagine how that is throughout the state of Minnesota? And what does that really mean? It means that we have to turn families away. And the bigger question is, where did they go? We don't have an answer to that question because all of the providers are in the same situation. Which households are going to win the lottery and be helped, and which ones are going to have to struggle even longer and potentially become homeless? This is the same dilemma that families need help are facing in their own homes, the scarcity of resources. However, like the families that we help, even a small amount of funds can change the situation dramatically. And any increase in FHPAP funding has the same results for the FHPAP providers. Providing FHPAP funds is a great use of public dollars and has been lasting results in helping families achieve stability. Any increase in funding will result in positive housing outcomes for the households that we serve. And one thing I do want you to remember is data and numbers are important, but not as important as each and every household in Minnesota. We, as providers, cannot lose sight of the people behind the numbers, and we're requesting that you don't either. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Shay Diaz. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Howard. Or Chair Howard, I'm sorry.
You're all good. Thank you.
Chair Howard and committee members. My name is Shay, and I'm a Native American mother of three children. I live in Twin Cities, and I'm here to testify on preventing homelessness because I've experienced this myself, and I want to be able to help others. I currently have a place, although it's not in the neighborhood of my choice. There weren't many options where to live, so I had to take it. I'd like to share the first time I became homeless. It was due to a tornado in North Minneapolis. I had nothing as the tornado took everything. I applied for emergency assistance, and this included FHPAP, but I was unable to find some place to live because there was such a demand for the financial assistance. They made me go through an intensive process to simply apply for help in order to get my own place. I needed help getting furniture, funds for rental deposits, and needed someone to help me navigate through this process, which exactly FHPAP does. Second time I was homeless was due to COVID because I was a manager at a local bar, and as you know, bars were closed down. I had plans to move into a home, but the COVID interfered due to so many things shutting down and not being able to get the help, which made me stay in a hotel for 9 months. I had to use my hard-earned money, COVID stimulus, unemployment, and had money. Oops, I'm sorry. And then my first option for the place fell through. I had to submit and pay for application fees, and still didn't have luck. I'm grateful to have my place now, although I am fearful of moving because I do not want to become homeless again. When I found my current home, if I had FHPAP as funding for financial assistance and advocacy, I would have opportunities. In addition to help with paying for moving costs, not only is it time consuming, but to find the resources, let alone to know where to live. While this is my experience, I know others feel the same, and the increase to FHPAP help them out tremendously. I'm like getting nervous. Opportunities are available, but there are not enough, and the process is very difficult. That's why FHPAP is so great, because of its financial flexibility, and they can provide supportive services. Not everyone facing homelessness has the barriers, high barriers, and they just need a hand in figuring out how to help them advocate and get the money to get out of that crisis. Thank you, Chair Howard, and the committee members for hearing my testimony. Preventing homelessness is more affordable than responding to homelessness, and FHPAP is the best tool we have to do this.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Thank you. Please state your name and share your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Jean Lee. I head Children's Hope International, which is legal advocacy and public policy. R&R Family Centers are our shelters. We do transitional and permanent housing, and also housing services, health care, and human services. I wanted to give some background because I've done real estate development, property management, construction, been a building contractor, and various other positions in housing. I've rebuilt my three-story house that was hit by a tornado, so I know how to use all the tools. I'm a former Fortune 500 corporate auditor that switched to fixing government systems to better serve Minnesotans. Now, while I support Representative Sensenmura's bill, I also know that the most affordable homes are those owned for a long time by seniors, including those with no mortgages. And the costs of maintenance and repairs they need help with as being the cheapest and most affordable types of housing. I would like the support of the representatives as far as prioritizing seniors and persons with disabilities in keeping them in their homes, because they are often targeted by developers for the huge profits that they can make. And these homeowners, and it also affects renters too, they need to be housed, have stable housing, because if they are homeless and on the streets, they soon die, and we want to prevent deaths. The other thing is to expedite their applications. They too have families. They have sometimes their family members who are caretakers in the homes with them, and this also destabilizes them. I will wrap up in a minute. Solutions are in Senate File 2728, delete all version, House File 2614, delete all version, and House File 4620. So while we urge you to support House File 2271, we also ask that you place priority on seniors, persons with disabilities, and their families, and also triage, because we had this conversation. Is to triage, because I think that people who do the intake have the most information on the situation, and they can tell whether or not the people are at risk of being homeless and what's needed to be the safety net for them. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Anyone else that would like to testify? If not, we'll move to member discussion. Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Sensenmura, for carrying this. You and I have both had conversations in regards to what's affecting not just our counties. I mean, we are leading when it comes to homelessness, but to get the recognition that this is throughout the entire state, and the accessibility of, and that I want to give thanks to our testimonials. I see it in my district, Neighborhood House. Thank you for the work that you do. Also, how this has had an effect in our tribal nations. These are the programs that are a necessity right now to fund, because the reality is that we have children right outside of this Capitol that are families and their families that are homeless. It's not just, you know, certain communities. It's spreading throughout every community. And so thank you for carrying this. I know it's a lot, right? And we've talked about that. But this is a spark for the necessity that we need to address this crisis, this homeless epidemic that really bounces between Hennepin and Ramsey County. Thank you.
Representative Dotson.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Representative, I appreciate the heart behind this bill. Question I've got is, what in this bill actually helps add to our housing supply with the shortage that we have for housing? Is there some mechanisms in this that actually helps with that?
Representative Sensenmura.
Yeah. Thank you for that question. You know, I think this bill is about getting people into the houses that we have, and it's about keeping them in the houses that they're already in. I know that this committee is also doing a lot of other work, I think especially around some policy changes for building of housing, and I know you all made investments in that last year. You know, I don't think every bill can do everything or needs to, right? And so I think when we talk about the housing continuum, this is one piece of it. I think certainly what you're talking about, the building of housing, is the piece that comes before that, and I'm certainly, you know, supportive of that, as I'm sure this committee is, but I would not say that this bill directly addresses that.
Representative Dotson.
Thank you.
And Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Sensenmura, you happen to, I'm just wondering, I appreciate what you're doing here. I work with, in my community, in my church, I'm the deacon, and we hear these stories. I get these stories all the time and work with the people trying to figure out solutions to their situations. Sometimes we can help them, sometimes we can't. Our church doesn't have a lot of funds, but they're able to send them to a place where they might be able to get some help. I'm just wondering if you happen to know how much funding is in the already slated in the bill for next year for the Homeless Prevention Assistance Funding Program.
Representative Sensenmura, and we could maybe, I'm not sure if there's someone from the agency here too that could come up, because I do know that we provided in total about $100 million in FHPAP last year. Much of that is out the door or is part of an RFP process. I know, but I don't have the exact numbers. I'm not sure if you do, Representative.
Yeah, thank you, Lee Johnson, for the question. I believe that 55 of it was kind of fast-tracked is what I remember from last year, but would love to have technical assistance about that.
It is my
welcome back.
Hi. It is my understanding that Minnesota Housing has just done an RFP recently to finally distribute the last $27 million of the appropriations from last year that will be going out to providers for the next I believe it'll start in June or July and go until the end of the biennium, which is September 30th of 2025.
Thank you. Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Sensenmura. Actually, the $27 million is left over from this year, the biennium. There's another $45 million for next year, for the next biennium, was what the budget sheet we received about a month ago. So that's going out already. Then I'm also wondering if, I think we had $45 million in the budget last year for this current year of the biennium. It's either 45 or 55. I can't remember which, but we just learned out there was $27 million that was left from the testifier. That's be going out for this second half of this year. So I'm just wondering, with this extra $10 million, Chair Howard, that's going to be your entire budget, I think, with the target that you received. One thing I want to point out that from the Wilder study that they do on homeless, I believe it's every 3 years, since 2018, homelessness has dropped 7% in the state of Minnesota, which is great. I'd like to get it down to zero, but I don't believe we'll ever get that because some people just don't want to live in a home. I don't know why. What I'm really happy with is that even though it's not down to zero yet, since 2018, children and youth homelessness has dropped 17%. And I think we're doing the things we need to do. The Wilder study is going to be coming out. The full study is going to be coming out in May of this year, so I'm looking forward to seeing that. So, but I understand what you're trying to do, and I want to thank you for what you're trying to do. But like I say, we have $45 million in the account for next year already. So,
Lee Jensen, I want to go to Ms. Highmark, who pulled up the budget information to kind of help us.
Yeah, thank you. I also want to thank my colleague, Justin, for helping me out with the internet problems here. So for the FHPAP program, there is an appropriation for fiscal year 26 and fiscal year 27 of $10.3 million each year. So that would be $20.5 million as the base and the tails.
We'll go to Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Spencer Mira, for bringing this forward. You know, I had a question for the testifier. You know, we talked a little bit about Ramsey County and Hennepin County, living in Hennepin County. You know, we have needs for supportive housing, and I'm just wondering from, you know, statistically, this money, has it been used for building multi-unit supportive housing opportunities in the past, or is that something that's part of the plan?
Representative Spencer Mira, and I think you kind of answered this with Representative Dotson's question, but go ahead.
I'd love to turn to my testifier.
So FHPAP is to help with rent, deposits, mortgage, and utilities. It typically does not help to build housing. It is to help those that are already in their house that is that could potentially lose their housing, or to move those that are homeless into housing. So it does not build units. However, there are four components of FHPAP. There is outreach, coordinated entry, rapid rehousing, and prevention. So it isn't just one bucket. It does cover a lot of the continuum.
Representative Myers.
Good. Thanks.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Sensenmura, thanks for this. These are some of the things that we should be working on. But I wanted to ask the Chair, has your target changed at all, or are we still at $10 million?
Representative Nash, it's still the same.
Okay. So, I just try to level set, as I do every time we're talking about money that's bumping up against a target. You went from $110 million to $10 million, that's not going to fit into the Chair's, unless you've magically convinced him to give you the entire target. He's giving me the look like no. But just want to, I always try to level set, because we get people who come down here and they're excited about a bill. And I think that we should probably try to set expectations as we head into that presentation, that if the committee target is $10 million and your ask gets nibbled down to $10 million, that we have to have that frank conversation and talk about what the realistic number is going to be. Thank you.
Vice Chair Gbadje.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Thank you, Representative Sensenmura. Great to see you in housing. Really appreciate this program. From what I've learned in it from my years being on the housing committee, it's actually one of the most, the fastest ways that we provide support to folks who are really suffering or on the brink of homelessness or actually homeless. And so what I just wanted to know is, you know, again, we do a lot of work in the housing committee across from people who are in shelter to people who are seeking to buy their first home to also building housing, but not everything can do everything. And so this bill in particular at least really helps with the homelessness piece of it, with the prevention of homelessness, with the stability piece of it. And I think it's important that in this committee, especially, you know, as Representative Nash rightfully noted, we do have a smaller target. That we're thinking most critically about how can our dollars be used to be most impactful, and I think a program like this would probably meet that definition. So thank you so much for bringing this forward.
Vice Chair Gbadje took my closing statement pretty much by word, so I don't know. I'll go to the Censor Mirror for the final words.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Howard. Thank you, committee members, for the robust discussion. I really just want to thank you all for the work that you do on this committee. You know, housing is incredibly private and personal. And so the testimonies that you all hear, the testimonies that we heard today, people are inviting us into their lives. They're inviting us into their homes. And they're talking about, you know, some of the most tumultuous moments in their life, right? A tornado, the COVID pandemic. And so I think this program is incredibly important. Flexible dollars that can meet people where they're at, that can meet the moment. I think it's a great investment for our state. I don't know, you know, Representative Nash, that my powers of persuasion are enough to get the whole target, but I do know that, you know, housing advocates and organizations have come together and talked about, you know, with a smaller budget, what is some of the best investments that we can make, and certainly this program rose to the top. So I do hope that you all will consider it for your omnibus, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you. And with that, I renew the motion that House File 2271, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Sensenmura. Next, we have House File 4645, Representative Kozlowski's bill. And while you're getting situated, I'll move that House File 4645 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Kozlowski, to your bill.
Great. Thank you, Chair Howard, and fellow members of our Housing Committee for the opportunity to present House File 4645. This is a bill that would appropriate funding for the Minnesota Homeless Study that's led, we just heard about, by the Wilder Foundation, who's been a really trusted partner in Minnesota since the early 1900s and has been reliably equipping the state with really important data and storytelling and bridging coalitions across Minnesota since 1991 with the support of public and private funders and many housing providers and volunteers. And now we're here to say it's time for Minnesota to be added to that list of sustaining partners. Every 3 years, the Wilder Research conducts a one-day study statewide to better understand the prevalence of homelessness in Minnesota, and really also understanding those circumstances, as we've heard in the bill before, grounding us in that experience of houselessness. The most recent study took place in October 26, 2023, and that include, you'll hear more from our testifiers, but face-to-face interviews, as well as a count of folks who are experiencing homelessness. And this is really important because we all know that the federal HUD has the annual point in time, and that's done in January, and it's just really drastically not as robust and human and people-centered as what this is doing. So since 2006, it's also really important to note the uniqueness in the companion with our tribal nations who share geography with Minnesota is actually the first and very unique in this partnership. I think it's really important to illuminate that it's not just about the data and that the tribal nations are involved, but we're really modeling to the country about how do we have collaborative, really strong, trusting, and respectful relationships with both our tribal nations and urban Indian communities. And also want to give note to the over 1,000 interviewers with the nearly 5,000 people who shared their stories that took that and turned it into data and really important, importantly improving the policies and programs across the state. So with the Wilder, who is now in the three-year study process in which they're widely communicating these results to communities and policymakers like us, this investment is going to report this wealth of information and help us to use the data to inform policies at the state, across county, local governments, and many nonprofits and many other partners. It's really important because we need to understand and to illuminate, you know, for our unsheltered relatives, for youth and families, for older adults, folks in rural areas, for tribal nations, and more. I wanted to illuminate a couple of examples of how this data has been used specifically by the state of Minnesota. Minnesota Housing used the data-informed decision-making workshop focused on population-specific responses to unsheltered homeless relatives. State agencies used data to inform several specific legislative requests, including those that provide, for example, credits for youth. At the start of the pandemic, the state requested a special analysis to understand more about the needs of people at risk of COVID-19 in applying for their FEMA application. And I'll also just note special reports and regional reports were done on specific issues around youth, older adults, veterans, families, folks experiencing long-term houselessness, unsheltered houselessness, those who were in foster care, and so much more. And the last thing I'll just say here before I turn it over to my testifiers is, again, that this is so much more than just the data and the numbers. And I'm here, as many of you are, because it's deeply personal. And we know that as legislators, we have the chance. And I think as a state, people want to be a part of the process, but they also want to be a part of the outcome. And in Minnesota, we have that process. And we have seen impact in the outcomes, and we need to keep pressing on. We're turning these dots and numbers and facts and figures into human stories of our aunts and our cousins and our siblings and increasingly our grandparents. So in a state where we're saying that it's the best place to raise a child, to work, we're also saying that this is a place where no relative should be homeless in our homelands and that everybody deserves a safe place to call home. So I want to turn it over to my testifiers so you can understand why this research is so critical to the work that we're doing at the state and across all levels and why the state should be a partner in it.
Thank you. Our testifier is Michelle Girard. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Howard and members of the committee. I'm Michelle Girard. I'm a senior research manager at Wilder Research, and I'm the co-director of the Minnesota Homeless Study and the Reservation Homeless Study. And I've been at Wilder a really long time. So Representative Kozlowski said a lot about this study. I couldn't have said it better, so thank you so much. I'll just say a little bit about my experience on October 26, which is when we did the study last. Started out in the morning at the Union Gospel Mission at 6:30 in the morning. It was pouring down rain with 30 volunteers that spread out across the mission to do one-on-one, face-to-face, 30 to 45-minute interviews with people experiencing homelessness. Everyone gets to tell their story, and one of the unintended consequences of the study is all those volunteers that are interviewing those folks get to experience that relationship in that short period of time of understanding one-on-one what that experience of homelessness is. I then went to a family shelter, and then I went to a food hot meal program, and then after that to a large shelter program, and then outside. So lots of different stories just locally to tell from our last study. As Representative Kozlowski said, we do pull together the data to produce a lot of information for our state. And pretty much we've heard that every program in our state uses the information if they work with homeless folks to understand the experiences of homelessness, trends over time, to understand the population's needs, current needs, histories of trauma, histories of homelessness, employment, health issues, if they have children, some questions about the children as well. We have a special section for youth and veterans. So telling all of those stories, we also produce a report for every region of the state because homelessness is in every corner of our state. And then, of course, the unique sort of once-in-a-country experience in our tribal nations, as Representative Kozlowski said. We are well-renowned across the country for our partnership with tribal nations, and they've really been able to use their own data, recognizing tribal sovereignty, to plan for housing and access funding. So why are we coming here today to ask for funding? Well, we've been in relationship with public and private funders for many, many years, since 91, cobbling together funding for the study. In addition, Wilder Foundation has provided in-kind support, our own funding, to help shore up the study. And it's become more and more difficult and time-consuming to get funding. We spent a lot of time just fundraising that we could spend communicating the results. And it's pretty critical in this next stage. We have so much information right now, and we don't have funding to communicate it. So that's why we're here today. So thank you so much for having us here today, and I'm free to stick around to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for all your work on this study, which is just such an invaluable resource for policymakers and for the state. Just going to member discussion. Any members? Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard. Representative Curran, originally I missed it. I just saw the 900, Kozlowski.
Kozlowski.
It's one of those days. A lot of things going on, doing a lot of research on all these bills today. But I missed it. It was originally I saw the 900 $900,000 up front, and I didn't see until line 1.9, there's another $900,000 for the net for the 26. Now, I'm just wondering if this is funding is going to end up going into the base, so every year it's for the doing the study every 3 years, we end up paying 2.7 million dollars for this study.
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Howard, and Representative Johnson for the question. You know, that was one of the things we've been having a lot of conversation about, obviously, with our budget target. We're having conversations about just in terms of as a state elevating housing and the dedicated ongoing stable funding for just all of the things that we need. We recognize that that's a big, tall order, and it's going to need a haircut this year in looking forward. But I think that our ask would be, you know, any meaningful contribution would be a heck of a lot more than what our testifier described, of just being able to take off that community burden of having to go out and make those asks and public-private partnership. So I would say that we didn't bring forward an official amendment today, but we came in knowing that we would be seeking a much smaller amount than the original ask.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Kozlowski, I want to thank you for that information. These studies have been done every 3 years by the Wilder Institute. We have many different places that do studies. They give out the information not only to the state but different organizations. A lot of times they're nonprofits that try to find funding different places from different organizations to do these studies. Some are commissioned by other organizations, some are not. But data is always good. The question is how it's paid for. I'm not sure if this is the answer or not. We already had a 40%, almost 40% increase in the state budget last year. Doing it again, I'm not sure is the route to go. We're already good possibility of deficits next biennium. So it's, and I'm concerned on this one because this is putting money into next biennium already for the 26 fiscal year 26. So, but it's something that we need to consider.
Seeing no other members, Representative Kozlowski, final word to the bill.
All right. Well, I'll just end by saying, as you heard, this is really about making sure that we have a tool sustaining and that this tool is long-lasting to really help us make good policy, to have continuous learning and improvement, measure our progress, and adjust our actions. I think it's also really important, the communication, the different reports that are being used, but also that we're holding ourselves accountable to our relatives across the state experiencing homelessness and changing these systems. So just ask for your support in making this urgent commitment that this would send to Minnesota, that this is a new era full of pathways to housing and racial and economic justice for everybody. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And with that, the bill is laid over. Next, we have House Bill 3210, Representative Purcell's bill. As Representative Purcell is getting situated, I'm going to move that House File 3210 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And Representative Purcell, I understand you have an A3 amendment. Would you briefly describe the amendment?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. The amendment, I worked with the staff of this committee to try and instead of creating a brand new program for this type of funding, to try and fit it in an appropriate use under an existing program. So that is the latest effort to try to be clear of what we're trying to do.
Any discussion on the A3? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A3 is adopted. And we're going to unwind that, or we'll, yeah. Okay. Maybe. I know that Lee Johnson has an A4 that we're going to offer on an informational basis. If you're all right, not unwinding and just giving you a chance to speak, if that works for you.
That'll be fine because the amendment didn't get in time, but I would like to talk about it.
And would you like to do the bill presentation and then talk about it, or talk about it now? We're fine either way.
Either way is fine with you.
How about we let Representative Purcell present her bill, and then we'll go to your amendment, Lee Johnson. So now to Representative Purcell as your bill as it's amended.
Thank you so much, Chair Howard. We know housing is an issue all across Minnesota. The challenges are many, and our response must be multi-pronged and innovative. Creating affordable housing for working families is an area I'm deeply committed to doing everything I can to show communities large and small that homeownership is possible and can be done in a cooperative model. Last year, you all created the Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grant Fund, carried by Representative Frederick, and the proposal before you is to have bonding dollars be added to that grant fund, as well as making it so that manufactured homes on municipally owned land with public infrastructure could qualify for these funds and only these additional funds. I put my shoulder into a project making progress in Northfield called the New Leaf Co-op that would qualify if the city applied for these funds to show that a cooperative model is possible for affordable home ownership. I firmly believe we can create dignified housing in a sustainable, community-centered manner and with Minnesota-made manufactured homes, plus funds from a capital investment bill. In addition to this grant program, those funds could go into communities like mine in Greater Minnesota, willing to try a new model to show that it can be done here in Minnesota as it has in other states as well. And I'd like to turn over to my first testifier, Chair Howard.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Welcome. I believe we have Commissioner Galen
Malika.
Thank you for helping before I butchered it.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it, Commissioner.
I go through the same thing at the county board, so I always ask so I don't slaughter their name.
Welcome to the committee.
Absolutely. Chair Howard and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to be here today to testify on Representative Purcell's bill. House File 3210. I serve as the chair of the Reyes County Board of Commissioners. I've been a commissioner for 17 years. Previous, I was on the city council. I also serve as the Reyes County and the City of Northfield HRA chair, and I also chair the Three Rivers Community Action Board, which serves Olmsted, Rice, Wabasha, and Goodhue counties. I'm not going after your position, by the way. I'm letting you have that. I don't want to be in your shoes. In these multiple roles and the numerous hats I wear back and forth, there's one resounding issue that I see and my fellow board members and my fellow committee members that we see, and that is lack of affordable housing, and that is lack of housing. And so we need more housing, not just in our community or county. We need it across the state of Minnesota and southern Minnesota. Especially in greater Minnesota, we have a severe shortage of workforce housing. That is affordable housing for working families. Additionally, the options that can exist for this type of housing in our community are typically not ownership-based. In other words, right now, people are paying rent in mobile home parks. We also have the other issue of these corporate hedge funds, as I refer to them as vultures, buying up these mobile home parks and charging exorbitant fees of rent. Rice County now has three corporate hedge funds that own in our county, and then many across Minnesota. The options do not exist in these housings are typically not ownership-based. Thus, we find ourselves with a missing middle affordable workforce home ownership opportunities. That has a cascading effect across the region, a shortage of local workers, less kindergartners enrolling in our community schools, and increasing squeezed tax base. So as we work to remedy the situations, we must think outside the box in how we envision workforce housing. It also affects seniors and our veterans. Today's legislation aims to do just that. While municipalities and counties have a desire to innovate, Often those innovations in the housing sector come with barriers, unfamiliarity with the home type, misconceptions regarding ownership structure, and differing infrastructure needs. However, when incentives exist for our communities to explore new models of housing, particularly workforce housing, those barriers begin to disappear. Further, as Minnesotans look at housing crisis as a whole, perhaps one of the largest gaps in our approach is the lack of affordable ownership opportunity, particularly for first-time generation home buyers. Programs that encourage the development of affordable ownership and allow for Minnesotans to build equity and sorely needed, and this program accomplishes that. In conclusion, as we try to tackle the housing crisis on a local level, we need as many options in the affordable housing toolbox as possible. We also need programs that incentivize municipalities and counties to explore the new methods of housing, whether that be new construction types or ownership structures. The desire for doing something different is there. Municipalities and counties just need help in removing the obstacles to do so. This program would help accomplish the goal and encourage its passage. When we all come together to tackle the issues and work on the issues, we can all come together and celebrate the solutions that we come up with. So thank you, Chair and committee members, and thank you for the consideration of House File 3210. Thank you for what you do. Your jobs are not easy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Greatly appreciated.
Thank you. Next, we have Joel Hansen. Chair. Welcome to the committee, Mr.
Thank you. Speaking before I sit down, thank you, Chair Howard, and members of the committee. And I'll just be brief. I can just be here for technical questions. Joel Hansen, by the way, North Country Cooperative Foundation. I'll be brief and just stand for questions in regards to this bill.
Thank you. Yep. Is there member discussion? Oh, let's go to Lee Johnson to present the A4 amendment.
Chair Howard. Representative Purcell, the A4 amendment made this bill comparable and equitable to the current statute. Right now, with the Greater Minnesota Infrastructure Grant, it's limited to $30,000 per lot, per family lot, and no more than $180,000 for a multifamily housing unit. And a cap of $500,000 in 2 years for one or more housing developments. But unfortunately, the bill that you have changes that for this particular manufactured housing. It changes it from $30,000 to $60,000 per lot, and also changes it from a max of $500,000 to an unlimited max, where one single program could take every dime, wiping out, letting nobody else have anything. There's a reason that we have the caps, and that is to make sure it gets spread out all over Minnesota. It's designed for workforce housing, which is greatly needed in Minnesota. I'd love to have the extra $10 million on there, but that's why I had that, because it was put it on the same level. Because with the other program, that's existing, those lots are not going to be owned by the city or the county or any government unit. They're going to be owned by the individual that owns the home. So now you're taking and putting an unfair advantage for a municipality or a county to get more money to do this, they could actually do smaller lots and collecting rent for the person living there because they're living on the county land, even though they own that home. Unless the county might sell it, but if they don't, they're putting a manufactured home on rented land. So I have concerns about that, but I think it should be done equally across the board. I hope you can understand that. So that's the gist of that amendment, to make sure it's unfair, everything's on the same playing field.
Thank you for offering that, Lee Johnson. I'll go to Representative Purcell to see if she has any reaction, or to Mr. Hansen as well.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Thank you for offering the amendment. We have worked quite a bit on this, and the idea, the original fund is basically for infill. And we know that if this is a greenfield development, there's just more infrastructure cost. And that is why working with staff to try and specifically say that it's not that one of these projects could take the entirety of the Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grant Fund, but it may only take up to the amount appropriated from bonding into this fund, because we have that exact same concern, and we know that there's housing needed across the state, and we are not interested in having one or two projects completely drain the fund. The idea with this is that there's a unique eligible use, and that it's going to this unique housing type. And just to further clarify, the idea is that it's not that the city or the county would own that land forever. It would be the cooperative. So it'd be the resident owners and their cooperative association that would own the land, instead of a private firm who we have seen some unscrupulous practices, as Commissioner Malika talked about.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Purcell. If there's unscrupulous developers, that would be up to the county commissioners or the city council to make sure that they are not working there and they're not developing in their community. Make sure that things are done properly. There's zoning people, their staff working and doing the oversight. These infrastructure grants that I, Chair Howard, and I worked with, were designed to get new developments for workforce housing. And the extra $20 million is great. It helps a lot. Or extra $10 million to bring it to $20 million helps quite a bit, but it doesn't even come close to putting in the infrastructure. I've actually done water and sewer work, putting those lines in. I know how much the cost is, and I knew how much the cost was back in the mid-'80s when I was putting it in. The grants that we're offering up to $30,000 a lot doesn't even come close to what the cost is. It might cover some of the cost of planning, but it's something to help them to get it going. If you want to increase it, I think it needs to be increased across the board, because everything should be on the same level. Because now you're giving extra money. If it goes into a cooperative, it's probably going to end up being a nonprofit. And I'm concerned about that, because everything in this committee, we had $1.2 billion available for nonprofits last year. Not all of them went to a nonprofit, but that's how much was available for nonprofits. So we need to look at doing, if we get individuals to buy their own home, their own land, is what we need to do, and find a way to get that cost down. Because that is their generational wealth. It's their equity. That's how they make that generational wealth. A home is the largest investment anybody makes, or the vast majority of people make. And we need to find a way to make that more affordable so they can get that generational wealth. And so.
Thank you for bringing forward the amendment. I would just add my comments being that if we're going to do something like this, it's important to me that we're growing the pie. We're not having the same amount of resources, because the program in place is an important one. So thank you for bringing the issue forward. Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Representative Purcell, thank you for bringing this bill forward. It's great to have someone else in the Housing Committee talking about manufactured housing. I think my fellow committee members are sick of hearing me talk about it. You know, there was an article in the Star Tribune just yesterday about what a great source of affordable housing manufactured housing is. And typically in this committee, when we've been talking about it, we've been talking about trying to just preserve and maintain the existing manufactured housing that we have. But I'm really excited about this proposal, the concept of bringing new manufactured housing online. It would really help with our housing affordability crisis. And so, again, thank you for bringing it forward. And you can count on my full support.
Representative Purcell, final word to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Thank you, members. Representative Johnson, I think we agree. We know that these Minnesota-made manufactured homes that are incredibly energy efficient, they can be made all year round here in Minnesota. They're between 30 and 60% cheaper than site-built homes. It's actually a way that we have seen first-time homeowners be able to create that generational wealth. And I'm hoping that an innovative program like this is something, just like Chair Howard said, we can grow the pie, try this one community in Minnesota, and then that this could go to other communities, especially in greater Minnesota. So thank you for hearing my bill today, members.
Thank you. And with that, I'll renew my motion that House Bill 3210 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion. Members, we have two bills left, and for testifiers, I just want to note we have five people signed up to testify for each bill. So please, if you hear the sound, please finish your last sentence so that we have time for both of these bills. Up next, we have House File 4278 with Representative Lee. Welcome to the committee, and I'll move that House File 4278 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Lee, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is my first time presenting in front of Housing Committee, so I do have snacks, if you want to know. But they're on their way because we were, like, looking at the schedule, but it looks like you skipped a bill, and so we – oh, there we go. Right. Hey, good job, Madison.
We'll have to tell Representative Sensor Mira about
right,
this.
Right, okay.
Go ahead, Representative Lee.
But members, thank you for the opportunity to hear House File 4278, which would continue the momentum of development and investment at the Heights, which is a plot of 112 acres in Northeast St. Paul that our community has been remanaging in order to meet our changing community needs. As you all know well, communities across the country are facing a serious lack of affordable housing stock. And in St. Paul, that is especially true in my district, and it's been true too long. So when the Hillcrest Golf Course site was up for sale, the St. Paul Port Authority was tapped to turn the site into a first-of-its-kind mixed-use site for housing, light industry jobs, and 5 acres of parkland for community gardens potentially, and whatever else the community thinks is important. So last year, the legislature provided $11 million to help remediate and remove dangerous chemicals from the land to get the site ready for construction and whatever else we hope to do with it. So if enacted, the $73 million ask in this bill, House File 4278, would help continue this momentum and support more than 1,000 new units of housing, ranging from single-family homes to senior housing and multifamily units. We believe the Heights will also be the most sustainable large-scale housing development in the state's history. This is because the site was recently awarded the first grant from the recently created State Green Bank to finance a geothermal energy system that will provide more sustainable energy alternatives and significantly lower the cost of energy for residents. You may or may not know District 67A is has one of the lowest median household incomes in the state, very much like other districts in the range. And so this is really important for a lot of the residents who are on fixed income and need air conditioning and hot heating as our climate continues to change. So should the vision for the Heights be realized, we also hope to have over 1,000 living wage jobs on the site. You'll hear more from my testifiers about how this is a historic opportunity for the state and our community in St. Paul. And so I'm going to quickly turn it over, but also want to note that, of course, this is not a budget year, but hope this will be part of your conversation as we talk about building back our missing middle housing. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. First, we have St. Paul PED Director Nicole Goodman, and on deck is Ramsey County Commissioner Mei Chang Zhang. Ms. Goodman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Chair Howard, committee members. Again, my name is Nicole Goodman. I'm the director of the Department of Planning and Economic Development with the City of St. Paul. I do also serve as the executive director of the St. Paul Housing and Redevelopment Authority. I'm here to speak in support of House File 4278, funding for the housing at the Heights development in St. Paul. As mentioned, in 2019, the 112-acre former Hillcrest Golf Course site was purchased by the St. Paul Port Authority, and in June of 2022, after more than 2 years of work and community engagement by my team and PED and others, the St. Paul City Council approved the Hillcrest Master Plan, which outlined future land uses and new street network for this transformative development project. The Heights development will bring more than 1,000 units of much-needed housing within walking distance of 1,000 living wage jobs, which can be life-changing. As you will hear from the housing developers who are also speaking in support today, the development will provide housing for all levels of income, including affordable home ownership, as well as market rate, affordable, and senior rental housing, including deeply affordable housing at 30% of area median income. The Heights will also play a significant role in addressing the high energy burden across the east side, providing sustainable energy alternatives and significantly lowering the cost of energy. Recently, the Minnesota Climate Innovation Finance Authority awarded $4.7 million toward the construction of a district geothermal energy system at the Heights, which will be one of the largest district geothermal energy systems in the state and the first to use aquifer thermal energy. This will help the City of St. Paul and the State of Minnesota meet their goals to be net zero by 2050 for greenhouse gas emissions across all sectors. This project will transform a vacant, polluted golf course into a sustainable, tax-producing site, providing housing and jobs in a community that hasn't seen this kind of investment. We at the City are grateful for our partnership with the Port Authority and the investment from the housing developers you will hear from next, and we ask for your support and funding for this transformative development. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Next, we have Commissioner Zhang, and on deck we have Chris Sherman with Sherman Associates. Welcome to the committee.
Hello. Thank you, Chair Howard, and esteemed members of the committee. Thank you, Representative Lee, for sponsoring this and having us. I'm Ramsey County Commissioner Mai Chong Zhang. I represent District 6, where the Heights is located. And I just want to emphasize the critical importance of the Heights and what it means not only to the county, but as well as to the state in terms of meeting both affordable housing, job creation, and our sustainability goals. At Ramsey County, we've already prioritized affordable housing and have dedicated our HRA levy towards both the preservation and development of affordable housing. We were one of the first ones to put funds towards the cleanup of the Heights with our environmental remediation funds and have also supported the Port Authority's successful application to the state's Green Bank. At the local level, we are doing everything that we can to meet the needs of the state to build and preserve affordable housing and meet our climate goals. Most importantly, for this project, it's rooted in the diverse cultural and socioeconomic perspectives of our communities. With the leadership of St. Paul Councilmember Nelson Yang and our St. Paul Port Authority, they've engaged the community to reimagine about what's possible there. The needs and what we are building here, it comes directly from our community. And it's a first, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to make sure that this site is going to be affordable for all, at all income levels, and make sure that our the cost of utilities remain affordable for everyone for many decades to come. However, our city and county resources aren't enough, and we cannot meet our state's need for affordable housing without state investment, and that's why this ask is so big. But most importantly, it's also because the need is so great if we are going to reimagine what it takes to build sustainable and equitable development. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Chris Sherman, and on deck, Johnny Opara with JO Companies. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair Howard and committee members. I'm Chris Sherman, President, Sherman Associates. It's a pleasure to be here today to speak very briefly to all of you about our role at the Heights, working closely with the city, the port, JO Companies, Twin Cities Habitat, the county, the state, and many others. My role here today is really to give you a very high-level overview of the housing component. 25 acres, 1,046 homes, $432 million of new investment going into those homes. Excluded from that are the parks, the infrastructure, the light industrial, the 1,000 jobs. All in all, this investment across 112 acres will be close to $1 billion. The housing components are really focused on efficiently using the sources available. And for us, we look at leverage of private resources. Close to $200 million of the $432 million will be privately sourced. We are looking at the federal programs, low-income housing tax credit, new market tax credits. From federal programs, close to $70 million will be coming into the state of Minnesota, the city of St. Paul, the county of Ramsey. We're looking locally with the city. The city's investment here is significant. Right alongside the state and the Fed, we are really looking to pair resources in the most efficient way. We have $360 million really effectively lined up for this $430 million investment. The state's investment will provide a historical impact that can be generational and sustainable housing, serving all incomes, all ages. We're very pleased to be here today. I'm going to pass it off to one of our partners now, JO Companies.
Thank you. Next we have Johnny Opar with JO Companies, and last we have Chris Coleman with Habitat for Humanity. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good to see you again. And good afternoon, Chairman Howard, and good afternoon, esteemed members of the committee. I would like to also thank Representative Lee and for this opportunity to testify at today's hearing. My name is Johnny Opar, and I'm the president and CEO of JO Companies. We're a St. Paul-based real estate development firm. Our firm's philosophy is simple. We want to ensure that every development we have an opportunity to be a part of, we can deliver only the highest quality homes that are sustainable and that will be around for generations to come. My journey into affordable housing development is a personal one. I made a promise to my father, which was to build him a place where he could live with pride and not deal with issues that plagued him, such as older appliances, poor property management, his limited economics, which reduces choices for housing options, and having access to apartment buildings that were equipped to meet his physical challenges due to a medical event that he lived with since 1993. Unfortunately, my father couldn't see our inaugural development, The Hollows, as he passed away in 2018. But I decided and dedicated the building to him because his experiences and belief in me at the Genesis put me on this path to keep my word, help change the narrative surrounding what does affordable housing feel and look like, and see the pride in our residents' eyes when I asked them, how do you like living here? And as a result, it changed my life forever. Since 2021, JO Companies has closed on $43 million in new construction financing, providing 116 homes for individuals, families, seniors, working professionals, and supportive housing. Last April at a press conference, my development partner, Sherman Associates, Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity, laid out our collective vision for the Heights. JO Companies will deliver two phases, one, 199 homes, and the second would be 80 homes. Our bill is asking the state of Minnesota for $73 million in housing infrastructure bonds from Minnesota Housing, which will serve as a critical resource, a catalyst, that will provide funding for the Heights to deliver to the Greater East Side residents access to a range of different asset classes, which are supported by incomes ranging from 30% AMI to 80% AMI, which is considered market rate in this area. The goal isn't to create a concentration of poverty, but bring together a range of different economic backgrounds to the Greater East Side, which is already a melting pot of people, immigrants like myself, cultures, languages, academic institutions such as Metro State, major employers such as 3M, and small, medium, and large businesses. That being said, thank you so much.
Thank you. Next, we have Chris Coleman. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'll try to be as brief as I can. First of all, I just want to thank you for the attention you're giving housing across the state of Minnesota. This is an issue that has been finally given its due in terms of its importance. It is critically important for our families, and particularly for our children. We are part of this exciting opportunity at Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity, where I serve as CEO and president of one of the largest Habitat affiliates across the United States of America. And I didn't say my name. My name is Chris Coleman, for the record. At Habitat, we know that affordable home ownership is transformational. It is that wealth creation that was spoken about earlier. And the Heights is one of the most important opportunities that the state of Minnesota has to advance home ownership among moderate and low-income working-class families, those that are at 60, 80, or 100% of area median income. The Habitat's role will be to build 147 units, all told. So far, we have support from the state for 29 of those initial units. Those initial units will be constructed during what we call the Rosalind and Jimmy Carter Work Project this fall. It is the Super Bowl of affordable housing across the country. Our two most famous volunteers are Garth Brooks and Tricia Yearwood, who will be here working side by side all week long, starting September 29th. So we hope to see some of you out there. But this is a transformational opportunity for the East Side, for the metro area, for the state of Minnesota. We are happy to be a part of it, but it is the work that we're doing is just the beginning. House File 4278 will make sure that we can fully build out those 147 units of home ownership, and we would greatly appreciate your support.
Thank you. With that, we'll go to member discussion. Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lee. I know how hard you've been working and dedicated on this, and how we've been prioritizing what St. Paul housing looks like on our delegation. I want to say hi to my former mayor and constituent, Chris Coleman. I'll see you around Cherokee Park. But thank you for addressing also the partnership of what Habitat for Humanity has been in our communities, serving our low income and providing first-time home ownership. My family, it was a product of that organization when my uncles and cousins came, and looking for the hardships of what equity looks like when it comes to housing. And so to see history and legacy of our city, our Port Authority, our counties, and I know within our delegation, I look forward to continuing to support this project and recognize the importance of how this is going to change the east side of St. Paul. Thank you.
Representative Hussein.
Representative Lee, thank you for bringing this bill forward. And this is transformational movement for east side, not only, but the whole state of Minnesota. When it comes to housing and affordable housing, and we do have a housing crisis. And this will uplift not only East or St. Paul, but the whole state of Minnesota. And this is a great bill, and I look forward to working with you. Thank you.
Any other discussion? If not, we'll go to Representative Lee for the final word on your bill.
Sure. Great. Thank you, Chair. Appreciate members of the St. Paul delegation for supporting this project. I also want to just call out Mr. Aparo for sharing his personal story. I know we wanted to make sure that we made it between your 10-15 minute, you know, time slot. And so, I want to go back to his story because, you know, all of us, right, are really lucky to have homes. And I think that, you know, something that we, some of us might take for granted is like how important it is to have that foundational basis for children and people. Because we know people who have access to safe and affordable housing are more likely to have better health outcomes and also, you know, better academic success for students, right? And so I'm very proud that the partners here have entrusted me with this bill and really proud to work with the delegation to ensure that we have affordable housing on the east side and in St. Paul as someone who grew up in public housing and, you know, really benefited from this. And, you know, here I am today. And so really appreciate the committee's consideration. And thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. With that, I renew the motion that House Bill 4278 be laid over for possible inclusion. And last but not least, we have House Bill 5032, Representative Bonner's bill. Representative Bonner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
I'll move that House Bill 5032 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And Representative Bonner, I understand you have the A1 amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair.
Briefly describe your A1?
It is basically a technical amendment. It basically changes associations from a singular to a plural.
All right, thank you. Oh, sorry, Representative Bonner, I believe that's the A2. I believe that the A1 is the MMB. I'll just briefly describes where the where this is going to live, correct?
Yes, that is correct, Mr. Chair. My apologies, I got ahead.
No worries. Any discussion to the A1? If not, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? The A1 is adopted. You just described the technical A2. I'll move that. All those in favor of the A2 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The A2 is adopted. Representative Bonner, two-year bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Common interest communities, also called homeowners associations or HOAs, have sprung up in cities across America. They create private, nonprofit micro-governments, often with little oversight, regulation, or a path for dispute resolution. Supporters say HOAs preserve the local community, ensure neighbors are good neighbors, mow the grass, keep the property up, allow for better cost negotiation on property maintenance or insurance. And for many, this is true. Opponents will tell you it's about keeping up property values and often an experiment in unchecked power from nosy neighbors and overzealous boards that seem to make up the rules as they go with little continuity or oversight. While some do a great job and govern equitably, fairly, and manage HOA business and finance as well, as the growth of HOAs has skyrocketed, so have the stories of egregious abuses, mismanagement, and rising expenses. In extreme cases, homeowners spending thousands of dollars to ask questions, dispute inappropriate charges, ask for basic information on HOA finances, or lose their homes to foreclosure or liens that begin with minor fines and fees. HOAs are popular with cities. Builders pay for basic infrastructure at set home standards high, offering new taxpayers and revenue while creating micro-governments, taking pressure off local officials and city resources, but largely are left to their own devices. However, HOAs often lack oversight for accountability or reporting, fines and fees assessed with little consistency and virtually no recourse to settle disputes. Worse yet, local attorneys specializing in this type of law said he discourages 95% of potential clients from hiring him. Even with a strong case, he said, HOA attorney fees start to accrue for every call, every letter, every question, driving a simple dispute into tens of thousands of dollars, even if you can prove you are right in court. To get more complex, HOAs are governed by two sections of Minnesota law amended nearly 25 years ago. Professor and author Evan McKenzie summed it up this nationwide problem, saying, this is the most widespread dramatic privatization of local government functions that has ever happened. These are private governments that are doing all the local governments traditionally do, and it's unregulated. For those who encounter HOA problems, we often hear, if you don't like it, move. Asking homeowners to sell their largest asset in a location where they've built their families is not a reasonable solution to a lack of appropriate legislative oversight to protect Minnesota homeowners. As the number of HOAs continues to grow, one thing is clear, that to best serve Minnesotans, this task force is one first step to assess the situation, evaluate best practices in Minnesota and nationally, and suggest recommendations to the legislature to reform Minnesota statute to provide ample consumer protections. And with that, I have a number of folks with me today.
First up, we have former Representative Amy Wasilewicz, who just can't quit the legislature. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Amy Wasilewicz. I'm a member, a resident of Wiper Township, and I actually serve on my HOA board for Wiper Preserve Condo Association. And I'm a former legislator who worked on a few HOA-related bills when I was in office. So I moved into my condo in 2019, and I received copies of my HOA documents, one of which was something about this thick that was written on a typewriter. And I think that's a good kind of a good metaphor for the laws that we're talking about here that need to be updated in terms of, as Representative Bonner said, we haven't had any major amendments since in about 25 years. I think it's time to update these laws, and I'm glad to see that this bill is here and being worked on. And I think that it's really important that we're doing this in a way that is respecting all of the stakeholders who are in this area of HOAs and CICs. I do want to note a couple things that I think I don't see in the bill, but I think would be helpful to know for the work group to work on. And that is not only how fees have increased, but why those fees have increased. I think that's a really important piece of the puzzle that isn't in here. And I would also say, I think these things are important that are in here in terms of fees, but I would also add other things that are tacked on. So I think specifically of services, ground services, for example, our costs have gone up immensely with ground services, insurance, our water rates have gone up in the township, and so that's impacted us as well. So just want to make sure we're including sort of all of the big things. And those were a couple of the things that were reasons why we had to increase our fees on residents as a board was to cover those costs. I also want to say I think some fines and fees fee guidance would be great. I know as a board member, it's been hard to figure out where do we find those numbers, what do we do, what's the best way to do this. But I do think there are other things that are specific to specific communities that we need to have some flexibility there. And I would say lastly, given that the nature of the working group is to examine, one of the things is affordability. I just would caution against the work group coming out with any recommendations that actually put more cost burden on HOAs, because those would largely be borne by the residents in our HOAs, and we're trying to make things more affordable and we're trying to keep costs low, and we also don't want to have other things impacting our ability to do that. So thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Julie Guggen, and on deck we have Jennifer DeJourney. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Howard, members of the committee. My name is Julie Guggen. I'm the president of a nonprofit called the Minnesota Home Ownership Center. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of HF 5032. And thank you to Representative Bonner for authoring this bill. The center believes that owning a home is the foundation for personal and community success. For over 30 years, we've worked to educate buyers on the complicated process of owning and sustaining a home. We've carried out this work by partnering with community-based organizations throughout the state to offer unbiased homebuyer education, advising, and foreclosure prevention services. In our work, we encounter owners facing a variety of issues within their associations. Legal actions, including foreclosure, lack of or confusing communication among parties, uncertainty about governance structures, and more. This can be coupled with untimely responses from the board and frequent referrals to attorneys for clarification, which causes the owner, not the association, to incur legal fees. Issues related to homeowner associations are real. But in our many years of working on this issue, we've lacked a comprehensive understanding of the scope of the marketplace, prevailing practices in governance and management, the cost to homeowners, the impact of CICs and HOAs on the racial home ownership gap, and other matters. Furthermore, the current statutes related to CICs and HOAs are convoluted, making it difficult for owners and their advisors to understand legal rights and protocol. As CICs and HOAs are increasing in number and prevalence, these issues are being exacerbated. House File 5032 will ensure that we establish a shared understanding of CICs and HOAs throughout Minnesota, that we create awareness about the good and bad practices that are prevalent, and that we have the lived history, research, and background we need to advance essential change. In the 2023 session, we passed important changes to 515B. We ask that you support the continuation of that momentum by passing this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Jennifer DeJourney, and up next, after that, Patrick Hines. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Howard and members. My name is Jennifer DeJourney. My family and I live in a single-family homeowners association, and I speak today in support of House File 5032. It is no secret that HOAs have become troublesome because they are typically run by residents with no training, no licensure, and no accountability, and there is no help for homeowners when things go badly. My HOA is an example. They stopped having elections, lacked open meetings, transparency, their records were carelessly maintained, if at all, no conflict of interest, and no control. I had concerns about regular elections, operations, and accounting practices, and it did go badly, and it was very traumatic for my entire family. In 2019, thousands of dollars were demanded of our family, and to protect our largest asset, we paid over $4,000 to remove an absurd lien that was placed on our home. It did not matter that we timely disputed the debt that the HOA claimed we owed. Our choice was to immediately pay or our home was at risk. And it didn't even matter that we objected and to protect our rights appropriately. My husband and I immediately brought litigation against the association in district court and a second action in conciliation court as pro se litigants because we could find no organization or oversight body to help us. However, our HOA had two law firms, five lawyers, multiple paralegals and legal assistants, infinite amount of money through insurance policies, and their ability to levy other homeowners' finances against us. We discovered through intense litigation that we were charged usury interest level rates, a different homeowner's charge was placed on our account, other unrelated items were charged to us wrongly, and we were billed in a ridiculous, unreasonable amount of attorney's fees. In the end, through a settlement that was hard fought by our family, our HOA paid us almost four times what they forced us to pay, plus all mediation costs, and agreed to a long-term operational changes such as hiring a management company. Minnesota needs to join states like Texas, Colorado, California, and the other states that have reformed and modernized this law, and this bill starts that process. I encourage you to pass this bill and then come back in future sessions with common sense reform to protect the 1.52 million homeowners in Minnesota across this great state. And finally, this bill has the power to start the process to reform two state statutes, 515B and 317A, which has bestowed HOAs tremendous amount of power with no check or balance, and that is why this task force is needed, and I thank the representative for doing just that. Thank you very much for your time and your willingness to do something and make it better for all of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Patrick Hines is up, and then last we have Becky Cole. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Patrick Hines with Messer Lee Kramer, representing the Community Associations Institute, which represents the interests of homeowner associations in Minnesota. I want to thank Representative Bonner for bringing the bill forward and including CAI as a stakeholder on the list of stakeholders who hopefully will be working on this task force as soon as this summer. We do support passage of the legislation, and I agree with a number of the comments made by the previous testifiers, and I'll note that I and other members of CAI have met with and spoken with each of them over the years as we've worked on issues from solar panels to attorney's fees and everything in between. I just want to point out a couple things. As the previous testifier said, there are about 1.5 million people we estimate living in HOAs. With that many people, there are going to be disputes and complaints. And I would just ask that the legislature keep that in mind, that when you have 1.5 million people living under HOAs, there will be disputes coming here. We believe the task force is a great idea because it is better, we think, to have a comprehensive look at HOAs and CICs across Minnesota and let the legislature come back in 2025 with some comprehensive package of potential legislation instead of trying to deal with individual complaints and concerns in a one-off manner. I know we're running late on time, so I just will reiterate our support for the task force, and thank you for the time.
Thank you. Last, we have Becky Cole. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Thank you for allowing me to speak. And I want to say, as a HOA homeowner, I am 100%, 150% behind this. We do need some standards of conduct. We do need some people brought together to discuss this and put some processes in place. There are business practices that are in place for other types of organizations in Minnesota. If we were included in that as homeowners and in an HOA, it would be a wonderful thing, because as he was saying, that Yep, there are disputes, but don't minimize that. That's the way the disputes are resolved or who's bringing it. I mean, imagine waking up one day and finding the sheriff at your door that your house is being foreclosed on simply because it rained on Tuesday. And I say that sort of tongue-in-cheek, but under current Minnesota law, that's what can happen. HOAs don't need a legally justifiable reason to take your home. They don't need they don't even need a court action. You can wake up tomorrow and be out. It doesn't matter if your mortgage is current or not. It matters who is in charge with your HOA. And my home shouldn't depend on the whims of someone else. And I have heard stories from people all across the state with different situations and with nowhere to go. And one of the things I want to say is the county commissioner who was here, they need to be involved in this discussion. I noticed in that list that they weren't there. Neither was anybody representative from the cities. I get bounced back and forth by all kinds of people when I go to help. And Chair Howard, you have seen my emails of all kinds of things. So I want to say it is time for a change. And I also want to close this out as that there is room for homeowners on that committee. And I want to be one of those homeowners that is on this committee. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for the attention you brought to this issue, Ms. Cole. Thank you. Members, we can go a little bit long to make sure that members have a chance to ask questions. Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And when I was mayor, I did experience a lot of contention with some of the HOAs. And, you hear from some of the ridiculous, like, you can't have a veteran who flies a flag in their front yard because there's been now a decision to outlaw flagpoles. Well, I'm going to land on the side of the veteran who fought to put themselves in between us and harm's way. And I think that what we've seen with HOAs is sort of an overreach of good intentions. So I support this. And Representative Bonner, I'll give you $10 if we can rename this the Karen Act.
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Like that, the Karen Act. Well, let this also be the furthering of the Karen Act. Representative Bonner, thank you so much for bringing this bill forward. As we've talked a lot in this committee and at the legislature about just the impacts of the widening and really large racial disparities in home ownership, got to also look at the beginning, which was the AOAs, which was the OG racial segregator and excluder. And so my question is if it's possible to add on the list or make sure that we had the centering of especially Black community, but Black and posse folks who were barred out. And even with the end of discrimination, of course, is now led us to the gaps in home ownership. I think it's really exciting what some other states have done, like Michigan. They actually worked on the CIC and HOA issue and required HOAs to remove racial covenants are still on the books a lot. And I know here in Minnesota, we've got Just Deeds that's doing really good work on that. And also the state of Washington actually went even further. They did some recording fees of $100 off the basis that the folks who are living in the HOAs actually benefited off the wealth opportunities that were boxed out for communities of color. So just some really good examples as we're looking at the roadmap and looking ahead. And thank you for the good work and hope you'll consider looking at some of those examples and adding these to the working group. Thank you.
Lee Johnson.
No, Chair Howard, Representative Boehner. Actually, I like this bill. It's a good idea. I've actually dealt with the Karens when I was a deputy sheriff. It's no fun. But I would... Unlike Representative Kozlowski, I would consider taking a different approach. I've been on a number of working groups and different things. When you get 20-plus people, it doesn't go well. It doesn't get done, especially get it done by next year. I would look at paring that down to get the people that really need to be there to make sure that they – and then most of them, you have both sides that are going to be there. take a good dive into what needs to be done, what, how can we make these programs work better.
Can I respond?
Just hold on, Ms. Cole. We can go to you. But Lee Johnson, any final words?
And that would be it. Just look at paring it down so we make sure that we get things done right. And it gets done by next year.
And I'll go to Representative Bynner or Ms. Cole if you have a response.
I will say, and I'll turn it over to Ms. Cole, we did really try. We worked with Ron Elwood at Legal Aid. I worked with a number of stakeholders who've worked on similar bills, as well as some folks out in the community. And we did try to be thoughtful about, to your point, of keeping it to sort of who are the minimum necessary to really look into this issue. Because to your point, I appreciate that we don't want to get so large that it's unruly and difficult to manage. But I also certainly appreciate the idea of making sure that minority voices are heard. I didn't mention it in my presentation, but unfortunately, when these started in the 60s especially, a lot of the conversation was around getting to pick your neighbors, and in some cases, getting to decide who didn't become your neighbors. Historically, we find that in HOAs, there is still a striking lack of diversity in HOAs as compared to general housing populations in regular neighborhoods. So it is certainly an issue, and I want to make sure that I appreciate Representative Kozlowski's point there. It is definitely noted. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe we did have some legislation in the last couple of years to address racial covenants and make sure that those were removed from housing documentation. So, but I'll let the chair may know more about that than I do. But with that, I will go ahead and hand it over to Ms. Cole.
Ms. Cole.
Thank you. And I want to say I appreciate the thought behind paring down the list. But I have heard from people from all over the state with a variety of types of issues with their HOAs, from being thrown under the bus because somebody has a disability, and I mean, and all kinds of things. So each one of those people on that list do have a role in this. But when I went to them, and trust me, I have turned over every leaf I can turn over looking for help for people who have come to me for help, it's always, well, they're a government agency, we can't get involved, or it's a dispute between neighbors. You can sit back and watch the destruction happen, and you can have your hand in my wallet, but you can't do anything. And a lot of times it is about they don't understand how HOAs function or what the role is, and I think that is something collectively that can be a good thing that can come out of this committee. There are a lot of different perspectives on this and a lot of people who are involved, whether they want to be or not, that can have an influence on the policies that are put in place.
Thank you. Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, to the testifier. As in law enforcement, these HOAs are civil issues. Law enforcement doesn't get involved in them at all. They have nothing to do with it. The local government, it's nothing to do with them. They're not involved in it. It is between the HOA and the person. They can go to court, but the local units of government cannot enforce the HOA's bylaw.
It is the local unit of government that has established the HOA, though, by virtue of the contract with the builder. That is where the HOA originates from.
We're a little over. I'm glad we get to finish with a bipartisan bill, and I'll just add my gratitude for the testifiers and Firmson Bonner for bringing it. I don't think there's any question that there should be more of a legislative lens and focus on regulation of HOAs. I think just about every member has a horror story that they've heard from somebody. And along with those individual stories that affect, some of the stories we've heard, there's also a huge impact to the cost of housing. Our HOAs, we haven't really discussed it too much today, but they play a lot of our discussion, how do we make sure that the homes that are being produced are affordable, HOAs and the sort of rules that they impose have a huge impact on the cost of housing. And given our housing shortage, especially a shortage of homes that people can afford, that's an important focus of this task force. Not every issue a task force makes sense, but boy, this is one where makes sense to kind of get folks together, dig in, and come back next year to do some important reforms. Representative Bonner, you get the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, I think, you know, I want to be clear, not all homeowners associations are full of nosy neighbors and Karens. Some of them do a great job. But I think there are some really important lessons learned to be learned here from the folks who are doing it well. And to the point, you know, a lot of these boards are made up of well-meaning homeowners with really not a lot of education or training. They've been given little guidance and statute on how to operate or how to regulate. And so realistically, in some ways, the legislature has been derelict in its duties, right? We have not given that guidance to them. So I think it makes sense that we're at a time and place where we should, in fact, be working to make sure that we have best practices, that we're able to establish guidelines and rules of the road. But I want to underscore one thing about these disputes. And I think Lee Johnson brought it forth. When we talk about when a homeowner has a dispute, it is a game of hot potato or a game of not it, right? The local law enforcement doesn't want to do it. The city council doesn't want to take care of it. The county folks don't want to deal with it. When you go to the courts don't want to intervene. In fact, they have a pure displeasure at having to deal with these kinds of disputes. So the reality is consumers have little or no protections. And so it's really important to underscore here that one of the major outcomes of this task force is that we need to restore that balance for consumers and give them a path to have a set of rules of the road and a way to resolve disputes in a regular and orderly manner. So I appreciate all of your help and your support today.
Thank you. With that, I'll renew the motion that House Bill 5032, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And the bill is laid over. Members, we do not have a hearing tomorrow. We'll be back next week to work on our omnibus finance and policy bill. And with that, we are adjourned.